Welcome to the Quest Podcast, proudly presented by the Muscular Dystrophy Association as part of the Quest family of content. I'm your host, Mindy Henderson. Together, we are here to bring thoughtful conversation to the neuromuscular disease community and beyond about issues affecting those with neuromuscular disease and other disabilities and those who love them. We are here for you to educate and inform, to demystify, to inspire, and to entertain. We are here shining a light on all that makes you, you. Whether you are one of us, love someone who is, or are on another journey altogether, thanks for joining. And thank you to our sponsor, Cytokinetics. Cytokinetics is dedicated to supporting the MDA community and to advancing potential medicines for families impacted by neuromuscular disease. Today, in the spirit of Valentine's Day, we are talking to two married couples about their dating and eventual marriage. Under most circumstances, dating and marriage can be full of highs and lows. And when you throw a disability into the equation, there can be some unique challenges for the couple to work through. Today, we're going to benefit from all the wisdom these two couples have to share. I'm so excited to have all of you with me. Should we do a quick round of introductions?
Thanks for having us. My name's Amy Schuteman, and I'm married to my husband, Jamie, and we've been married for 23 years. We have two sons, Luke and Jack, who are 18 and 14, and we met in preschool.
Fantastic. And Amy, you have Bethlehem myopathy, is that correct?
Yes, I live with a type of muscular dystrophy called Bethlehem myopathy.
Gotcha. Fantastic. Well, how about we let Jamie go next?
She stole all my thunder. My name's Jamie. I'm a civil engineer. Like Amy mentioned, we met in high school and dated for a couple of years. And we did break up eventually and got back together in after our college years. But yeah, there's a lot, you know, that we'll get into here, I'm sure. But just very happy to be a part of this and share a little more of our story with you guys.
Excited to have you both here. John, how about you?
Hi there. I'm John Kerr, and I'm married to Crystal. We've been married for about 7.5 years, and I work for the state of California and also run a nonprofit. And I live with spinal muscular atrophy type 2.
Fantastic. And Crystal, would you like to say hello?
Yeah, I am Crystal Englehart, very happily married to John, and professionally I am a researcher for the state of California, and yeah, just happy to be here and share our story as well.
Awesome. I am so excited to talk to all of you, and I'm just going to jump right in because I have so many questions for you guys. I would love just to hear your love story. You know, where did you meet and how did you ultimately end up together?
So Jamie and I, like I said, we met in high school. I was a freshman and he was a sophomore, and we had not a mutual class together, but didn't really know each other. And then two of our mutual friends kind of set us up, and so we kind of started dating from there. And we dated for about 2.5 years until Jamie was a senior in high school, and about halfway through his senior year, we kind of, well, really, he decided that we needed to break up. So, so we did, and it was a good thing because we were so young, but we continued to be friends through. He went on to college, and then we really continued with a friendship. You know, after the initial shock of the breakup and all those feelings, but. So we continued to be friends, and then we eventually, after Jamie graduated from Purdue, he moved to Memphis, Tennessee to kind of start his career in civil engineering. And
is that not where you were living at the time, Amy?
I was not. So I was still we live in Indiana. And so I was kind of finishing up college myself, and then we decided that I'd never been to Memphis, so I was going to just go for a visit as a friend. And kind of that's the rest of the story. We got back together from there, and about a month or two later, moved to Memphis myself. So,
oh, sounds like it was meant to be. And then how long after that did y'all get married?
It was a couple of years. So it was 97, I think, when she first came down to Memphis. And it was October of 99 when we got married. Funny you say, meant to be, you know, we believe that as well.
And yeah.
It takes me back to when we did break up through high school, and it was, you know, as all many high school relationships can be, ours was just, we were too involved, and we had a lot of growing up to do. But we both remember my dad telling us that, or telling Amy, would be say, just need to let him go, that if it's meant to be, it'll be.
Yeah.
And, that's what
really held on to that, you know.
That's what happened. And Amy had an aunt too, that just, she really believed that we were meant for each other. And, she's passed now, but, we believe that she was right as well.
Yeah. That's so great. It's wonderful that you had, you know, families looking out for you, and that you had the wisdom to take their advice, because when you're kids, when you're teenagers, you don't know what you don't know yet. And yet you think you know everything. So,
that's right. That's exactly right.
I love that. Well, John, Crystal, which one of you would like to take us through your journey?
I can start. Yeah, okay. Definitely. Crystal and I met on a camping trip through some mutual friends. She came up there with some friends of mine, and we met, and I saw her at lunch one day, sort of walking across with her lunch, reading the book, and she caught my eye, and I was like, wow, she's really cute.
Oh.
And so that afternoon, we're sitting by the pool, and I went up to her, and she was Sunday then, and I was in my chair, you know, and I sort of bumped her with my toes on her shoulder and said, hey, would you like to take me into the pool? And she said, yeah, sure.
Wow.
And then I'll let her tell the rest of the story.
But you guys didn't know each other at this point, right?
Yeah, well, we maybe for a day or two.
Okay.
We had met on that trip. So it was during that trip. Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. We had chatted a couple of times before he came up to ask me to take him in the pool. And I was just like, I was smitten instantly the first time I talked to him. Just so funny, like a wicked sense of humor, and so attractive. And I was just like, man, this guy is awesome. So I was so excited when he asked me to take him in the pool. And then he really like sealed the deal on stealing my heart when I had him in the pool, because he looks up at me and he's like, are you okay? Are you okay? Like checking to make sure like my arms weren't getting tired, because I was holding him, kind of like floating him around. And I was like, yeah, I'm good. But then he says, because my life is literally in your hands. And he said it in like just the funniest way. Like just his sense of humor is so amazing. Like,
sure.
Yeah.
Wow. That's fantastic. And then how long after that did you guys get married?
It was a few years. We were actually friends for like a year, kind of casually dating each other before we started dating more seriously. And then once we like jumped into like a serious exclusive dating, we jumped all in, and we got engaged my last semester of college. So I didn't want a super long engagement, and I didn't want to get married while I was still in school. Okay. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You kind of answered my question. I was going to ask what stage in your lives you guys were in. Were you in college? Were you working? John, were you also in school, or were you working by then?
I was working. I'm much older than her.
Oh.
I'm an old man, and I tell her that she keeps me young. But yeah, we wanted to wait until she graduated college. So, I actually proposed to her on my 40th birthday, and we got married about a year and a half later. And 7.5 years ago, time flies.
I love it. I love it. I love these stories. They're making me so happy. So let's go back to you, Amy and John. When did you know that this was your person? Like, when did you, you know, without a doubt, I know you had the break in the middle, but when were you just positive?
I felt like we always could. It was just something we always knew. But, you know, since we were so young, cause some doubt, people would just say that people could see that we were very in love, but we'd get a lot of comments like, you're too young, or, you know, there's other people out there. But I think we always felt it. But I think it's when I went and visited him in Memphis again, saw him again. Because even though we were friends, we didn't see each other much. We just talked on the phone. But when I saw him again, for me, I just felt just sure that he was the one.
Oh, that's so great. Was it the same for you, Jamie?
Amy and I were talking about this earlier today. I agree that we just felt like it was it in high school. But again, we were so young. Yeah, it didn't take much to rekindle the spark again there after the college years. So I just think we always knew, you know, I know we'll get into more about her disability and stuff like that, and why I felt like I wanted to be that person for her. I just felt like I was called to be that caregiver for her.
Oh my gosh. That gave me goosebumps. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, so nice. So, Crystal, I know that you said you had a moment in the swimming pool where he kind of stole your heart, but was there a specific moment for you when you just knew that this it was John for the rest of your life?
Yeah, it actually was that moment in the pool.
Really?
Like that moment. And I didn't tell anyone because I knew I would sound very crazy. Like, I knew I would sound very unwell to be like, I am in love with this person I met 3 days ago. But wow. In my heart, I just knew it. It was instant for me.
Wow. John, what about you? What was your moment?
For me, when I first met Crystal, we had so much in common. We laughed at everything the same, and we spent a lot of time together as friends. And I wasn't really in a mental place when I met her to sort of allow myself to be in a vulnerable place that you have to be in order to let love happen naturally.
Yeah.
And so it took a little time for me to, you know, spend time with her and get to know her. And finally, I slapped myself on the side of the head and said, hey, wake up. You're going to lose an amazing girl here that just absolutely loves you. And I let myself sort of drop all my shields I had around my soul and my heart, and just let her in. And, you know, I couldn't be happier than I did.
Oh my gosh. I just want to hug all of you. Your stories are so sweet. Amy and John, let me talk to you guys for just a minute. I'm curious, Amy, if you want to go first, how did your disability, how did it or didn't it impact your dating journey before you got married?
I think it definitely did. For me, the one thing that stuck out when I came across this question was, just honestly speaking, I was very, very insecure. Living with a disability, and I didn't know anyone else that was like me. And so I was constantly comparing myself against other non-disabled girls. And I think I would almost, you know, just self-sabotage in my relationships. So just letting those insecure feelings win out. And, you know, ultimately that was a lot of the problem in many of my other relationships and in my dating. But at the same time, I do feel like I was always, you know, I tried to be honest about my disability and what my needs were. And I had, you know, a lot of fun times with some other people, but it just never felt the same as it felt with Jamie.
Yeah. Okay. And John, how about you?
Yeah, very similar to Amy's experiences, you know, growing up, and I had a lot of friends, female friends, and I'm a straight male. So, you know, I found myself sort of always being placed in the friend zone, you know. I had a very busy social life. I didn't lack for having fun and going out and doing fun things, but when it came time for, you know, intimacy or closer relationships, I didn't really experience that until like my college years. And even at that point, it wasn't to the point where I was completely allowing myself to be open 100%, you know. So I just hadn't really met the right person. But I definitely put myself out there, and it did pay off because I built up enough confidence to finally love myself for who I am, which in turn allowed someone else to love me as well.
Nice. So I'm curious, how did you share about your disabilities and what you needed, what kind of assistance maybe you needed, what kind of assistance you didn't need? You know, how did you approach that in dating? I know you said that maybe there were some walls up. Did I kind of hear that right?
Well, as far as the disability factor, and my needs go, I've always had care providers do my care. So when I was looking for a partner or you know, dating or just hanging out with friends, I didn't really need to fully rely on them to do my care. I was fortunate enough to have care providers that do all my care. And I really like to keep that line drawn between, you know, care provider and life partner. You know, Crystal does help me out with some things, but in the earlier stages of my life where I was just dating, you know, casually and being young and dumb, I didn't really rely on the person that I was with to do any of my care. So I didn't really have to explain my needs or anything like that. But, you know, there were occasions where somebody would have to maybe drive my van because I don't drive, or, you know, cut up some food for me, small things like that, you know.
Yeah. Okay. And Amy, what about you? Was your disability part of the conversation much when you were dating, let's say, other people besides JD?
Yeah, it definitely was. I mean, it kind of had to be. My experience with Bethlehemiopathy is, you know, I was undiagnosed until I was 44 years old, but I was disabled, but I didn't know. So for me, it was kind of hard explaining this unidentified, you know, neuromuscular disease to when I didn't really know what it was called. That was a real struggle for me growing up. I kind of felt silly, you know, that people would ask me, you know, what the way they usually worded it was, what's wrong with you, which isn't great, but that's what people usually say. And so I think I did struggle with explaining all of that, but there would be times. I had a big surgery during high school, and I had started dating a guy that had been a really good friend of mine. And so he kind of, you know, he didn't really skip a beat. Was in a wheelchair for several months after that, and he would pick me up at my house and load the wheelchair in my truck for me and drive us to school. And, you know, it just, some people are just naturals at stuff like that. And I think as far as me, when I was not like having a surgery or something, and I was walking, like stairs were really hard for me, and, you know, just getting to class without falling or getting knocked down in the hallways. And there would be times when I would fall, and the person I was dating with, you know, they would kind of explain I couldn't get up on my own, so they would help me down. So I think it was, you know, things like that I needed help with. And I think I was pretty good about communicating that.
Yeah. And were people's responses usually pretty favorable? Did you have mostly good experiences?
I did. I think for me, I was bullied a little bit in elementary school, but I really was fortunate that during high school, I had a pretty good group of friends and some, you know, boyfriends that were able to, that they were just really kind about it. So I feel like I was very fortunate.
Great. I'm going to jump back over to the spouses. So Jamie, before you started dating Amy, I know you guys were really young, so I don't know if this applies or not, but had you ever dated somebody with a disability before?
No, I haven't. It really, Amy and I were kind of our first
bumps
and stuff, you know, so it was all new to me. I hadn't dated anybody really before, so didn't have anything to measure against.
Okay. What about you, Crystal?
No, I hadn't dated anyone with a disability prior to dating John.
Okay. And what sort of challenges, Crystal, did you experience then when you first got together? And what were some of the victories?
As far as challenges go, I have to say, just really honestly, like the ableism of society was annoying for us. Like, we would be out on dates and we were very affectionate, like, you know, not gross, but like we hold hands and we kiss. And people would assume that I was his like relative, which was disgusting. Or like his caregiver, or people thinking like literal strangers thinking it was like appropriate on any level to ask like really personal questions about our sex life. Like just out of the blue, like at a party. I remember that happening and just being like, what? You wouldn't ask that to any other person at this room.
Wow. No, you're right. They probably wouldn't.
Yeah, it was the societal attitudes toward disability and sexuality and disability and love and dating that really was a challenge, just because it made me see another side of humanity that I hadn't seen before.
Interesting.
And I don't understand the victories. Could you expand on that a little? Like, I was curious when I saw that.
Yeah, anything that maybe you, I don't know, thought might be challenging going into it, but then it, you know, turned out to be a non-issue, let's say.
I didn't think of any disability-related challenges going into it. I just knew that he was a really amazing, special, like hilarious, smart, fun, sexy person. And that's really all I cared about.
Awesome. That's fantastic. So Jamie, when you met Amy, did you have any preconceived notions about her disability and any challenges that you might have in your relationship? And how did that play out for you?
Yeah, I was trying to remember going back, being 15 and seeing her that first time. And I think she said it was a common class we had, and we hadn't been introduced yet, but I noticed her, you know, she got up to leave the class, and I noticed that she walked differently as she left. But I still remember thinking that she was cute, but I wondered what the disability was about, you know, and I must have learned it a little bit later. You know, in high school, you hear rumors, things like that. Are they true or not? And somehow we got introduced by friends, and we had our first date. And I guess challenges back then were, you know, you had to find people to drive you around that have licenses and stuff like that. And,
right.
But it was just getting to know her. I mean, she was just, I mean, just like me, you know, the worries or whatever that I might have had about what are people going to think and that kind of stuff. She was just so, again, like me, it just kind of melted away. And I know that I need to see the disabilities and not let it just not be there, because it is, but that's just how it kind of has been for me and her. And it's not that I don't see it, but I see her. So she's so, again, just like me. I wasn't worried about anything after that first date.
That's really great. What about when you were thinking longer term? You know, when you were thinking about, I'm assuming you proposed to Amy, or did Amy propose to you?
I proposed to her, and
Okay, because that can happen, and that's, you know, we're progressive people here. but when you were thinking long term about proposing and, you know, spending your life together, were there any considerations there, or was it, again, was it all just Amy?
Just her. I mean, she had been my best friend from, since she was 14 and I was 15, and, you know, her disability, at least back then, it wasn't as progressive, you know, with age and stuff, it's getting harder, but, you know, she still was getting around pretty well. She's mm-hmm. able to walk without assistive devices and things like that, unless she had a surgery. So she was pretty independent, and really always has been. I wasn't as concerned. Again, she was just so independent, and I knew it'd be there eventually, that I might need to help more. And again, I felt called to be that person for me.
That's really great. Did you guys have discussions? Did you talk to Amy, or did you have things to think through on your end about how your relationship would be impacted as Amy's needs or mobility or function changed?
I don't know that we had many discussions. They were really more of, as Amy touched on, kind of frustrations, because we didn't know what her disability was. We weren't sure how it was going to manifest itself. All we knew was that it wasn't real progressive. It affected her, how she walked, and sometimes she would overdo it. We just knew that if she did have those days where she overdid it, she needed to rest and take it easy, get her strength back. So it was just kind of day by day, but really frustrating, more for her, but so tough to plan ahead.
Yes. Okay. Okay. And Crystal, what about you? You know, John already mentioned that he proposed to you. So, you know, when you were thinking about, again, you know, long-term spending the rest of your lives together, was there anything related to his disability that you really, you know, needed to consider, or that you talked about, or things that you discussed as John's condition progressed potentially that you would need to factor in?
No, to be honest, that wasn't a part of my decision-making, just because, I mean, every person changes, all of our needs, regardless of disability, all of our needs change over time. Like, we as people change over time. So to me, I never saw it as being different than that. Like, you know, my needs as a person have changed over time. And so I knew that we could learn together and grow together and adapt together to both of our changing lives over the course of a lifetime. Yeah. So that it was really just, that was my consideration.
That's amazing. John, she's kind of amazing, I have to tell you.
I'm a very lucky man. Yes, I agree.
Crystal sounds pretty wonderful. Amy, you are also a very lucky person to have Jamie. But
yes,
Jamie, to what extent do you own the caregiver role, and how do you balance the role of caregiver and spouse?
Well, I feel that I do own this. I want to be the first person that she thinks of and leans on when she needs help. But she's very independent and always has been, from how her parents raised her. She cares for us quite a bit as well, for me and our two boys. But, you know, again, I've talked a little bit about where she will overdo it, and we just need to convince her she needs to take some time and rest, and she doesn't need to do all of these things that she thinks she needs to do. You know, I'm here for her. We haven't touched a little bit on some of the stuff we do with MDA, but, you know, I'm a runner, and so are our boys. And you might think that's strange for someone with Amy's condition, but she's always told us to use our gifts, that if she had those abilities to get out there and run and jog, she'd be doing it. So, you know, some people might think that we're rubbing it in her face or something when we're out there running, but we, we do that. Now we've made it part of our family by including her in races, and we've got an adapter here that we use, and Amy's done 2 marathons now with us. We try to do whatever we can to include her in all of our family events.
I love that. I love that. You guys just finished the New York City Marathon, right?
Yeah.
With her older son, Luke.
Wow. So, I mean, you guys are serious. You do some serious marathons.
Crazy.
That is wonderful. That's wonderful. So, inevitably, Amy, the conversation when you are getting married and all of that, I think, you know, inevitably the conversation of expanding your family, having children comes up. And I know that, you know, your situation may have even been a little more complicated because you didn't have a firm diagnosis yet. But was your disability or your condition a factor in your decision making about growing your family?
Absolutely. It was. And I think, you know, I for years would just say I was okay not having kids, and that was that. And I was pretty solid on that. But I think that was fear, and I think that was the unknown of not knowing how, if my body would be able to handle a pregnancy, or if that would be safe, or, you know, would my kids have my same disability? Right. You know, I didn't know what it was. And I think it took me a while to, you know, the only way I can explain it is something in me just switched, and I decided, and Jamie, just to say, was always very open that he did want children. And I knew that. And I think that I just came around to trusting that since I was having these strong feelings that I did want to become a mother. And, you know, I didn't know if that would look like me having children myself, or if we would adopt a child, or how it would happen. But it turns out I was able to handle 2 pregnancies, and those were born by C-section. And it did, both pregnancies did take, I would say, a permanent toll. Obviously, totally worth it. But
yeah,
I feel like that's the most, those times were the most that my disability progressed.
Yeah. Weren't your doctors good about, you know, advising you and helping you kind of through that decision-making process also, or was it really up to you and Jamie?
I think we're very good about, you know, my doctors basically told me, even as having an unidentified neuromuscular disease, that there would be a 50-50 chance that, you know, our children could inherit my disease. But we both, you know, talked, and I've had a wonderful life, and we knew that we would help our kids if they did in fact have the same disability, they could have a great life too. And mm-hmm. and we just decided that really was the right thing, and had doctors around us giving me really good care and monitoring me very, very closely, so I felt safe.
That's great. And spoiler alert, both your boys are okay, right?
They are, yes. They're like Jamie said, they're both runners, which is absolutely,
yeah,
makes my heart sore. It's just to see that. It's just really special.
That's wonderful. And I also happen to know that your kids, you know, also have worn some of that caregiver hat, and they help you. I've read some other things about you, and yes. And you've talked some about that. It sounds like they're good-hearted kids with, you know, you and Jamie's hearts.
Yes, yeah. I mean, definitely. I think, you know, Jamie is a very good example of what it looks like to, you know, I think as a caregiver, it can be, you don't want to over-caregive, I guess, if
right.
that's a way to put it. You want to give that person as much independence as they would like to have. And
yeah.
I think my kids, it's kind of like a dance that you learn with the people that you live with, and you kind of, it's kind of an unspoken language that my kids have learned as well, just through watching their dad and how he engages with me.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. I also have, I think the listeners probably know that I have SMA as well, and I have a daughter we chose to adopt. And it was interesting as she was growing up, because I would notice her just sort of naturally reach for things or do things for me, I think just out of observing other people. And it's kind of heartwarming to see that they're becoming those kinds of people who observe and, you know, just kind of know to help out.
I agree. It's a beautiful thing.
It is. It really is. John, what about you? How much of a conversation was it around your disability and expanding or not expanding your family?
Well, I mean, the disability is a part of who I am, for sure.
Right.
Obviously, I do have a significant disability, and so it's something to consider. But for me and Crystal, it's just sort of in the back of our list of considerations. I mean, we always sort of make do with whatever situation we're in. We just make it work. So I know that we both know that if we were to have kids, that we would make it work somehow. But for us, it's not very high on the list of concerns or considerations. We're more concerned with, you know, things like climate change and overpopulation and bringing kids into a pandemic and things like that that are happening in the world right now that sort of make us stop and have a little more consideration on those factors.
That makes sense. That makes sense. So this is another question that I want to just throw out to whoever wants to catch it. But, you know, I think that in any married relationship, you know, there can be a dance that you do around just household responsibilities and ensuring that not too much responsibility falls to any one person. And I know that that can be a hot topic in conversations with some couples, but how do you all manage household responsibilities and keeping things sort of evenly balanced, I guess?
For me, it is a tough balance. Like Jamie has said, my parents really raised me to be, my mom will say, I was just naturally an independent person, and I just kind of took off and did things in a way that worked for me. And I feel like I do try, maybe overdo it a lot with the household responsibilities, because I feel like sometimes I don't want to be, it's just, this is for me personally speaking, sometimes I struggle with, I don't want to feel like a burden and I want to pull my weight, and you know, I struggle with those feelings of needing, I guess, to prove myself. And not that that's anything that Jamie's putting on me at all. That's just kind of maybe a fault of mine. But I think communication really is the key with the household stuff, and just being open about, you know, if I need help with something. And, you know, obviously he does the heavy lifting as far as household chores. And it is, it's just like you said, a dance that you got to figure out. Still, after 23 years, we're kind of brain-tuning that still to change it.
I think it's kind of an ongoing conversation. At least it is in my household. So, you know, and things kind of, you know, ebb and flow. And one person will pick up one thing along the way and another person will pick up another thing. Jamie, I know that you've already said that Amy does too much, but do you pretty much agree with what she said? Do you have anything to add?
No, I agree with everything that she just said. I'm not sure that I can add much, is there?
It's okay. Okay. John and Crystal, how about you guys? How do you balance, and, you know, do you have assigned things that each of you, you know, this is Crystal's, this is John's, or is it just sort of a natural, hey, I'm going to do this today?
Yeah, you know, we actually just kind of more so like take it day by day and share the load depending on, you know, we We both have very, at times, like stressful, busy jobs. So it's kind of like maybe if I'm having a less intense work day, maybe I'll pick up more, and, you know, vice versa. We try as much as we can to share the load, but I am like such a clean freak. Like I make the Monica Geller character look like a slob. So like, I really enjoy taking on the cleaning myself. So that John will have to like fight me for to help out with. That's just something I love to do. That's cathartic for me. But yeah, I feel like it's just one of the things I was really attracted to with John, besides everything else, is his communication skills. So like, he's made me such a better communicator. So we just really keep an open line of communication as far as expressing our needs, as far as, you know, I can't do this today. Can you take this on or whatever? So that's something that I appreciate about our marriage.
Nice. John, anything you want to add to that?
Of course not. She's in charge.
Smart man. There were never wiser words spoken. I love it. So I'm going to do a quick round robin here. And John, I think I'm going to start with you. What is your favorite thing about Crystal?
You know, I just love how smart she is. And she is completely obsessed with social justice and just making sure that everybody in society has a fair shot at succeeding. And that was what really attracted me to her. You know, just everybody and who has any sort of not the standard set by society. She fights super hard for their rights, and she's incredibly smart and obviously very adorable and sexy. And, you know, I can't pick one thing. How do you ask me to pick one thing? I can't do that.
Well, you know, it sounds like she's probably too wonderful to choose. Crystal, what about you? What's your favorite thing about John, or your favorite 50 things?
Oh my gosh. So I will try and narrow my list, although it's very hard because there's so much to love about my incredible husband. Aww. But honestly, I think one of the things that like really just keeps me so magnetized to him is his energy as a human being. Like he is the calm in any storm. He like, I could be having the most stressful day at work or, you know, with activism things I do, and I could just be, you know, having a hard time, and he always knows how to center me and calm me. And just, he has this incredible energy that is just, it's soft and safe and consistent. And I love that so, so much. But it's hard because then he's also hilarious, and he talks, you know, pretty quiet. So he'll like slide in jokes while we're at like a party that only I can hear. And like, nice. I love that. And he's very sexy and charming, and but I think that energy and that calming force he brings to my life is pretty high up on that list.
That's you guys. This is so nice. Amy, what about you? What's your favorite thing about Jamie?
Oh gosh, well, like they said, it's hard to pick just one thing. I mean, a few of my favorite things are just super hardworking for, you know, taking care of our family, and I really admire that. But you know, really, I'd have to say probably my favorite thing is, you know, having a disability at times can feel very heavy, or if you suffer a fall, or he always makes me laugh, and he just, you know, finds a way to get underneath my sadness at times and just makes me laugh. And you know, all the little inside jokes that we have, and it's not hard for us to just, you know, start belly laughing at the things that we say. So just, he's my biggest cheerleader, and it I couldn't love him more, or, you know,
somebody,
the absolute best person for me.
Well, Jamie, after hearing those three answers, I feel like there might be a little bit of pressure on you, but what's your favorite thing about Amy?
One of the top things for me is her faith in God.
for both of us. That's a big thing for us, that we center a lot of everything that we do in our lives around that. It's just so important for us as a family, as a couple, as parents. So that, like she mentioned too, her sense of humor has always been off the charts, sarcastic person that she can be. And again, the inside jokes that we have with each other, the funny voices and things. I love just for as long as I can remember, you know, just sitting on the couch and just watching TV and stuff together, just being around each other is what I look forward to every night, coming home and just being in her presence. And it's just something about her. It's obviously beautiful, you know, hasn't changed, aged a bit since she was in high school. And so many people tell her that she really hasn't. She's so kind as well. She wants equality and same things. Everyone should be able to have the same things.
Right.
So I love her fight for that. And I try to get behind it and support her in any way that I can.
That's so good. Oh my gosh. So I want to ask one more question, and then I'm going to wrap it up with kind of parting advice. Amy, I want to start with you. Being young and being a teenager can be so hard when you first start dating. And when you have a disability, there are additional insecurities and things that can, don't have to, but can come along with that. You know, if we've got any young people listening, any teenagers who are maybe about to get out there and, you know, put themselves out there for the first time in the dating world, what advice would you give them?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, I agree, it can be very difficult, but I think what it really comes down to is just honesty and being yourself. Don't try to change yourself to be something that you're not, and just be upfront. You know, a lot of people, especially at a young age, haven't even ever had contact with a person with a disability. So just kind of explaining it as it is and kind of maybe, you know, educating almost and kind of helping them to understand that, you know, people with disabilities are just like them. They want relationships, they want love. And I think that's just, the bottom line for me really is to be honest and be patient. You know, don't rush into a relationship that maybe isn't healthy just to say that you're in one. You want to be patient and take your time. And overall, I would just say, don't change yourself so that someone will like you. Just be yourself and the right person will come along.
I love that. I love that you said all of those things, because, you know, I've seen people fall into traps of, you know, changing themselves or, like you said, you know, being with the wrong person just to be with somebody. And it's so not worth it. You know, number one, it makes you unavailable when the right person comes along. That's so true. Yeah. So I couldn't agree with you more. John, what about you? Any advice for, you know, first time young daters out there?
Absolutely. Well, first, I really agree with what Amy said about not wanting to have to rush into something so serious right off the bat. You know, for me, I would advise that younger adults get involved in as many activities as possible in their community, whether it be at school or in church or sports or whatever, and just meet people and make friends and learn good social skills and take care of yourself. You know, love yourself first, have good hygiene, and, you know, develop your friendships and see where those go. And then you can learn how to start dating just on basically forming good relationships that are platonic at first. And then, you know, hopefully you'll start meeting people that you want to develop a further relationship with. And then take it nice and slow. You know, don't rush into anything and put yourself out there as much as possible. My parents used to tell me, or my dad especially, would say, you know, you ask ask 100 girls for a date and one or two might say yes, you know, and that one or two just might be the perfect one. So don't give up and just keep putting yourself out there and be confident and, you know, it'll happen.
Very well said. Very well said. And John, am I remembering right that you also put on seminars or conferences around relationships and that sort of thing?
I do. I have a nonprofit and we have a life development retreat every summer up in Yosemite in Central California at a campground up there. And it's for young adults with disabilities, specifically muscular dystrophy, where they can come and stay for 4 days and learn about jobs and college and benefits, how to manage your health care. And then, of course, we do have a session on dating and relationships that Crystal helps to teach that. So yeah, it's very rewarding. And I love being able to share knowledge with these young adults who are getting ready to enter into independence.
Oh, that's so good. And it's everything you said is knowledge that's so needed by young people. So I will definitely make sure and put your information in the show notes so that people can maybe find you. I can't think of two better people to teach those courses, except, you know, maybe Amy and Jamie should join you and teach for
that would be great.
That would be great.
So last question, and I know that this is a big question, but it's kind of, I think, the one that everybody maybe wants the answer to in their own relationships. So I'm just going to go around one more time. Amy, what do you think is the best piece of advice you've got for making a marriage successful?
I think the best piece of advice I could give is to communicate often and laugh even more.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love that. Jamie, what about you?
For me, again, it's that having that faith in God and just like putting that like a wheel at the center of the wheel, and it just affects every spoke, affects every part of your life, whether it's your marriage or your work or your kids, sports. Just that's so important to us. It's the center of everything.
Nice. Crystal, what's your best advice for making a marriage successful?
Honestly, I think it's something that I learned from John really early in dating, and that is to always treat your partner and speak with your partner from a place of love. Like, even if you're frustrated or you're having an argument about something, always come to that encounter with vulnerability and understanding and that softness of love, because it's like, no matter what struggle or problem you're going through, the core is how much you love your partner. And I think if you can center that in your life, I mean, honestly, that's advice that's helped me in all of my relationships, not just my marriage. It's just, no matter what is happening in the world or in our, you know, present circumstance, coming from a place of love.
That's wonderful. That's absolutely beautiful. And John, I'm going to give you the last word, although Crystal said that she got her best piece of advice from you. So, you know.
Well, she flatters me. I don't know if I'm that good, but I do agree with Amy, though. I think honesty and openness is just the most ideal key to a successful relationship. And then something, I know it's super cliche that people say to you at your wedding, but don't ever go to bed mad or upset with your partner. You know, me and Crystal, we're lucky enough that we don't get mad at each other very often. You know, we usually resolve things pretty quickly, but when we do, you know, we make sure that we resolve it and don't let it linger or stew on it for too long and let those negative vibes build up. You know, just be honest and open and resolve a situation as soon as you can.
Perfect. I'd love that. Well, guys, I can't thank you all enough for spending this time with me and for sharing your journeys and, you know, just yourselves and all of your advice with all of the listeners. So a very big thank you from me. And I hope that we can get you to come back sometime.
Thank you so much for having us.
Sounds great. It's been awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for listening. For more information about the guests you heard from today, go check them out at mda.org/podcast. And to learn more about the Muscular Dystrophy Association, the services we provide, how you can get involved, and to subscribe to Quest Magazine or to Quest Newsletter, please go to mda.org/quest. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd be grateful if you'd leave a review. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button so we can keep bringing you great content and maybe share it with a friend or two. Thanks, everyone. Until next time, go be the light we all need in this world.